Hi everybody, I'm Megan and I am an alcoholic.
Hi Megan, we love you Megan, lots and lots and lots. Whoa, this is cool.
Thank you everybody. So I was asked to speak on this panel and I called the programs person and I was like, is there like a guiding question other than being gay and an alcoholic? You know, and she's like, nah. I'm like, all right. You know, so it's kind of a choose your own adventure kind of panel. So here we go. I drank a lot. I got sober pretty young. I attempted to get sober at 22 first, and at 23 it stuck. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I really attribute my life today to Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that should be said first and foremost. I got sober first in Colorado and I moved to Tucson, Arizona about 2 years ago. I found a sponsor, well I went through a few sponsors and then I found a sponsor that had what I wanted. You know, she does a lot of service and she does the whole kind of deal, you know. And I come from a sponsorship line where we all know who we each other are, and I really kind of got a family with my sponsorship line. Which, you know, it's like when you move to a new city and you don't really know anybody and you're really uncomfortable in your own skin, that's a really nice support to have. So I was like doing my thing. I got shoved into service. It wasn't so much an option as a shoving, a gentle nudging. I'd say gentle nudging, but it wasn't so gentle. And, you know, I started doing some young people's things and showing up and, We were just Tucson, you know, we had Wacky Paw last year. And so we're getting that bid together and I'm doing inventory because I was like feeling just funny. You know, everybody has that like, I'm just feeling kind of funny. Maybe it's time I do a little bit of inventory. And wasn't really getting to know God as well as I could have been getting to know God. And I started doing some work with my sponsor around some stuff, and all of a sudden it was like I woke up one day after having some really intense dreams and was like, I think I'm gay. That's kind of scary, you know, and all the pieces of the puzzle started kind of coming together. It was like, you know, while I was drinking, I would have these feelings and I'd drink more to drown them out because that's not normal, you know, and you know, I come from like a pretty Christian home, and the marriage and the kids and that, you know, like the American dream was what was taught to me. And so, you know, like having feelings for girls was like, you know, and so I started having these thoughts, and the first person I turned to was my sponsor, and I was like, here's the deal. I really don't want you to judge me, but I think I'm gay. And she looked at me and she's like, I kind of had a feeling. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, like that made it really easy. Cause you know, like those are some tough things to say. And she and I started working around like, how do we bring God into this? You know, like first and foremost, we bring God in. And, you know, I started bringing God in, and not to say that like I did this perfectly, you know, I went to Wacky Paw 15 in Las Vegas, and it was in the midst of the like, holy shit, I'm gay. So I was like chain smoking and gambling. You know, like that's all I could do. And you know, but like what a great thing. We put in this bid and Tucson won the Wacky Paw bid, and I was immediately shoved into service. You know, I showed up to the bids and I was like, okay, you know, like I really kind of tried to stay in the background of the host committee and be like somebody's co-chair because I was like, I don't really want to do anything. And then all of a sudden there was just this like, we need a GLBTQ chair. And I was like, you know, and like I see like 17 eyes come onto me because it's like, you know, I'm in the midst of like coming out in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, which like was one of the most beautiful experiences because I got to fall into this pillow, you know, like I was absolutely terrified. You know, the first person I told was my sponsor. The next people I told were my sponsee sisters, you know, and I was terrified, you know, like I was afraid that they weren't going to love me anymore. I was afraid they were going to be weirded out to be around me because all of a sudden now I like girls, you know, and, you know, it's like, I'll never forget. We used to do a 10-step little thing on Sundays at my sponsor's house and go around and we all share and it's very intimate, you know, and she'd given me a nudge a few days before that maybe it's time that I share this to my sponsee sisters and, you know, and I started crying and I just told them and like there was nothing but love, you know, like they came and they wrapped their arms around me and they were like, cool. Cool dude, you know, like, and then those were the same girls that took me to my first strip club, you know? That's what you do when you're a good sponsee sister, you know? They were like, oh, you've never been to a strip club. I'm like, no, you know, so that's what you do. And then I was like, oh, I'm for sure a lesbian. And, you know, so Wacky Pop, right? I stand for the GLBTQ chair and I become that and I'm like, well, I don't really know how to do this. You know, it's like, I got sober under the pretense of being straight, you know, and I've only gone to like mixed meetings and that's where I'm comfortable and that's where I'm known and that's where I have friends and you know, like that's where I am somebody, you know, I mean, I think, and so it was like terrifying to go to these meetings and I don't know anybody and they all kind of look at me like, oh, here comes the Wacky Paw person again, you know, and I was like, Wacky Paw? And I really had to do a lot of work, you know, to get into the GLBTQ community of Tucson, AA community of Tucson. You know, and I started showing up and I showed them that like I was showing up not just for Wacky Paw, but I was showing up because I wanted to genuinely get to know them, you know, and I wanted to be a member of their community. You know, it was kind of like going back to the very early days of sobriety where you feel so uncomfortable in your own skin, you know, and I didn't really like going, but I made myself go and I, every time I met with my sponsor, I was like, I'm not going to those damn meetings anymore, you know, and she's like, oh yes you are, you know, and I kept showing up and I had the experience of somebody, you know, I was not going to share in those meetings unless someone called on me and they called on me and I spoke the truth because that's what I've been taught to do in Alcoholics Anonymous is when I feel uncomfortable in my own skin, I have no choice but to share the truth, you know, and I said that I'm really uncomfortable. I was like, you know, I am terrified by you people. You know, I was like, I feel uncomfortable. I don't feel a part of here. But I keep showing up, you know, because that's what I've been taught to do in Alcoholics Anonymous is no matter what, I show up, you know. And I had some people come up to me after the meeting and they're like, that's really funny because I don't feel a part of in young people's. And, you know, and I've showed up to some of the young people's functions and I really, I don't feel a part of, I feel estranged, you know, and that's kind of when I had this like, you know, like it's time to like bridge that gap, you know, we gotta bridge this gap between the gays, you know, and young people because it was like, it's pretty defined in Tucson and, you know, like of course there's the GLBTQ people that show up to the young people's and they're, you know, they're like myself that go to both and, so it was like that became my mission is like, you know, we start in Tucson and we move out, you know, and, we held some really awesome events, for Wacky Paw and it was really cool to watch people start to show up and watch the GLBTQ people, you know, like they all show up, Wacky Paw shows up, everybody starts mingling and, you know, and it was like, okay, you know, like we're all, at the end of the day, it's like we're all just drunks, you know, like we're drunks, you know, and that's, there shouldn't be any sort of lines. And so I got to get to know some of these people and now, you know, and they make friends and like that's the one meeting I commit to go to, you know, one of the meetings that I commit to go to a week is the Sunday Pink Triangle group. You know, it's been an experience because I've gotten to like have this coming out process happen in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and happen in the rooms of like the GLBTQ meetings of Tucson, you know, because these people know what it's like, you know, and that was one of those things that I was searching for, like, I don't know how to do this, you know, like, I don't know how to tell my parents, and I can go to this meeting, and here's a bunch of people that have experienced strength and hope of coming out to their family, you know, and, you know, it's like, I have gotten to grow into being a strong lesbian woman in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, which is one of those things that I'm very, very grateful for, you know, and every day I like, I don't do it perfectly, you know, and it's tough, You know, like I'm finding it's been almost 2 years since I came out, and you know, like I find that I still get really frustrated at how very straight the world is, you know, and that, so, you know, like that my girlfriend and I like can't walk down the street and not be stared at, you know, and those different things that happen, you know, but then there's these places that I get to come to, and no matter what AA meeting it is, I get to come to and I get to be home, you know, and I get to be comfortable and I get to be who I am. And, you know, it's like, it's the process of having a higher power, you know, having sponsorship and really being in service that keeps me grounded and being okay with who I am, you know, like I'm not uncomfortable in my skin today, you know, most days, you know, and that's a really beautiful thing. You know, I was actually talking with my sponsor before this, and this is the first conference I've gone to where I'm not super uncomfortable in my own skin. Like, I'm just having a good time, like, doing my thing, and I just don't care, like, what people think of me, right? Like, I always was so wrapped up and like, well, if I dress like this, then, like, people are gonna think I look hella cool, and, you know, and if I, like, do this or do that, or I put on the mask of being funny, you know, and today it's like I get to do the work to just be who I am, you know, and I get to get right with God first and foremost, you know, and knowing that like God loves me first, and then, you know, and then you all love me, and you know, I can like go out into the world and like be the person that I need to be. And I'm very, very grateful that I got to speak on this panel today, and thank you.
Thank you, Megan. That was awesome. Next on the panel is Jamie from Phoenix.
Yeah. I'm Jamie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jamie. We love you, Jamie. Lots and lots and lots. And lunches.
Thank you. That never gets old to me. When I came in, I was running the other way. So, like, this is kooky, but I always, or anytime that chant is done, I feel loved just the same way I did the first time it was done to me. So thank you. Thank you for asking me to speak. I was in the middle of a fourth step and someone came up to me and said, "You're speaking?" And I said, my heart jumped in my throat because it usually does when I get asked to speak, even though I've done it quite a few times. But that panic never changes. It's always there, but I, you know, I get a lot out of it and I enjoy doing it. And more than anything, I love passing on the message. And that wasn't true when I first came in. I liked to talk about myself and all my problems and let you know how bad I was doing and all that self-pity. And one of the psychic and spiritual changes has occurred for me as a result of coming in here. Something I never thought I wanted, is that I actually want to give back. And so, with all the fear and the panic and everything, I love to speak, and I love to, hopefully I can say something to someone tonight that will help one of you guys. So like I said, I'm an alcoholic and I'm gay, and I assume that's why, one of the reasons I'm here. But I'm not alcoholic because I'm gay, you know, like, straight, gay, whatever. I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, part of my experience in my struggles along with my alcoholism is, you know, coming to terms with my sexuality and, you know, in an unaccepting world. And thank God that's getting better. Thank God we live in the times we do now. I really am happy for that, for all the changes that have been going on. But, you know, it just, if I were to reflect on my life, and think about, you know, and never understanding before I came into the rooms, and think about how I never felt like I fed in and never felt comfortable in my own skin, as you were saying. And I was in constant fear and, you know, all of those things that I as an alcoholic feel that I understand today, which contribute to me being alcoholic. On top of all that, I'm gay, you know? And no one ever said you have to stay in the closet. You know, it was just assumed, and I picked up somewhere along the way in society that I had to do that. So I never told anybody. So just the same way I didn't tell anybody about my fears and my insecurities, and I didn't feel like I fit in because of my pride, I sure as hell wasn't going to tell anybody that I was gay. So that was even harder. And, you know, at a very young age, I had all those feelings, not good enough, afraid, and I'm attracted to women. And, you know, I started with, you know, crushes on babysitters and teachers like this.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh my gosh, she's so beautiful. And, so all of these things going on, and meanwhile, me maintaining this secrecy within myself at an extremely young age. And, man, you know, I didn't understand at the time, but I look back on that child, that me, and I try to embrace that. And that's nothing to be, you know, for the gifts of the program, I've been able to embrace that today and not look at that as something to be ashamed of. And just the same way with my alcoholism. And, so, you know, to kind of touch into that, like, my ism showed up at a very young age with all the things I said before, the fear and the insecurity. I always share this. I remember a time at a very young age, like, people talk about they don't, you know, being born an alcoholic or not. I don't really know. I don't really need to figure that out. I just remember that there was a time at a very young age that I felt like I wasn't afraid. Like, I was a really big athlete. I was a big snow skier. I'd jump off anything. I used to beat up boys. Like, I used to do anything, and I felt no fear. So now when the fear crept in, I wasn't very happy about that. So what I did, and nobody knew that I was doing this, is I started testing that fear. And it was a lot of, like, physical tests, because I was, you know, a tomboy, and I liked to do physical things, and I liked to play ninja and sword and warrior, baseball and football and, you know, on and on. It was always pretty physical, because I definitely didn't understand what was going on in here. I just didn't know that I liked it. I knew that I didn't like it. So that fear crept in, and I started testing it. And I would do things like go off into these really tall church steps, like really tall church steps, and jump off of them. And if it hurt, I would do it again. And I would jump off those steps until I felt like I landed perfectly or appropriately, or until it didn't hurt. Cause like for, to me, and like in that aspect, physically being hurt was wrong. Okay. Because I had this fear driving that. I used to have like, whoever threw softballs. I started flinching. I was a big softball player. Yeah, game softball player. Ooh, yeah. I had people throw softballs at me as hard as they can, and because I started flinching, and that was a fear, and I hated that. And I'm a shortstop, and I started flinching, and I saw it over and over. I said, "Hit it to me until I catch it, until I get it right, until I get it right." Kind of abusive, personal abuse. I used to have my sister punch me in the stomach as hard as she could. Poor thing was younger. She's like, oh my God, why did you do this? Like, oh my God. I'm like, do it again. Like, do it. I don't want it to hurt. And so, you know, just things like that. And I hated being afraid. And that's just an example of how it all started. But stuff like that went on in different circumstances and different situations and different places and different times. On and on and on and on until I came to a place that I could look at myself and realize that that was what was going on. And that's when I came into the rooms. But growing up for me, like, everything looked really good on the outside. You know, I think that I did a really good job of covering it up. Successful in school. I was a big athlete. You know, I made good grades. I went to college. You know, everything looked really good. And I didn't discover alcohol until technically my first drink was in a hot tub at age 6. I took a drink of my uncle's beer, but it was gross. And then I, you know, if you really want to get specific, I got a buzz at 13 on Bud Ice. But my first real drunk was probably about 15 years old. And these college kids took me to a fraternity party and they wanted to hang out with me. They thought I looked older and seemed cool. And I don't know, maybe they just wanted to break me in. But to this day, I don't understand why college kids wanted to hang out with a 15-year-old. And I got, you know, hammered. And I became very, very sick. I had an amazing time. And I'm like, this is the life. This is the life. This is the life. This is the life. But I was sick and puked all the next day. And I swore off drinking for a very long time. So, like, for me, the drinking didn't... I didn't wake up the next day sick. I wanted to do it again. Some people have that experience. No, I don't ever want to do it again. So I have these like wide gaps of time where I would actually not drink because I was put off by it. And I would actually be able to live a manageable life and do the things that I needed to do to be, you know, a good kid in society. Yeah, and all the meanwhile, in the middle of all this, I, you know, I'm experiencing my first, the discovery of my sexuality and having my, you know, first encounters, like real encounters, love, emotion, everything with a woman. And it was to Sarah McLachlan, you know. We were listening to Sarah McLachlan album, the Fumbling Towards Ecstasy album, and we're looking at each other, and it's just like, you know, holding hands and, you know, all those things. It's like, this is so wrong, but it's happening, oh my God, you know. And so, yeah, like that happened. And what was really a horrible, horrible feeling is that both of us walked away so ashamed. The next day, like, I went to basketball practice, and I don't know what she did, but we weren't talking to each other. So I felt completely and utterly abandoned. So these feelings of not being good enough, you know, my ism, all that is just on overload. You know, my heart's broken and all these things. And so, and meanwhile, I'm not drinking while I'm having all these feelings. You know, I had yet to discover what alcohol would be able to do for me, at least temporarily. And so I still go on with school and, you know, I show up and, always thinking about this other person, always thinking about, oh my God, I'm gay. Nobody knows. Looking around me going, if anybody ever found out about this, I'd be ruined. You know, denying lies, the rumors started to surface, lies, you know. No, it's not me. That's not who I am. It's not me. It's a lie. It's not me. It's not me. Never facing my own truth. You know, and I did the best I could with what I had. Like, that's what I knew, you know. So I would actually, you know, me and that girl, it's interesting. You know, I get to this, me and that girl, my first girlfriend, it's interesting because she turned out to be an alcoholic herself. And to my understanding, she's still sober today. I believe she's probably working on 10 years of sobriety. And we were actually able to make amends to each other in sobriety, in my second year of sobriety. And in the moment of us making those amends, I realized everything I thought I ever wanted, and this is not a negative to this individual, everything I ever thought that I wanted was not what I wanted. And it's not a direct hit to her, but I had this own spiritual revelation with myself that I'm growing. And I'm becoming this person that I think that I long to be, but never could be because I didn't have the tools. So I'm driving away from that amends. You know, it went very well. And I'm driving away from that amends, and for some reason, Sting is on my radio, like from the police. I'm like listening to Sting. I always have these spiritual revelations to the, I don't want to say the worst music, but the cheesiest music. And again, I don't know what's good for me, right? Like, comes to show what I know. But the sky just opened up and the Sting song's playing and I'm like, oh my God, I am okay. You're showing me a different path. And everything I thought I ever wanted is not what I wanted. And it was beautiful. Thank God for the tools. So, you know, when I went out to college and I, you know, went to college. I actually joined a sorority because I made a lot of efforts, and there were some rewards from that, and it's got its setbacks, of course, but there were some rewards for that. I got some good friends out of it. But in the meantime, I'm, you know, using these things to make myself look a way that I'm not, you know. I'm a sorority girl, so I must not be gay, you know. I'm a good sorority girl from good grades, so I must not be alcoholic, and, you know, and I'm trying to date men, and I'm trying to be straight, and I'm trying, and I'm questioning, I'm saying, okay, maybe I just didn't try hard enough. Kind of like with the alcohol, like, same thing. It's all, like, the addiction for me. Like, maybe I, you know, shouldn't have mixed these two things. Maybe I shouldn't have drank whiskey. Maybe, you know, same with the, you know, discovering being gay. Like, let's try harder with men. And that didn't work out, you know. So there were women in the background and, you know, men on the surface with dates, right? So, you know, basically, you know, to make a long story short, my path has gone with this like stream of me, for the grace of God, being able to hit a bottom. And that bottom was hit when I was rushed to the hospital, from being up way too long and drinking way too much and ending up in a rehab. And I was introduced to the program of AA. And I, unfortunately, I didn't stay sober for that first time around. I went into a relapse, and what the relapse showed me is that this isn't going to get better. And I'm doing things that just the normal Jamie wouldn't do in a sane, sober state of mind. And I went down 10 times faster than I ever thought. And so for the grace of God, I was able to get back into a rehab. And grant you, I never went to rehab because I wanted to. I went to rehab because I ran out of things and ran out of money. And I knew that I could call my mom. And this is always kind of embarrassing to say. I knew I could call my mom and say, I'm going to go rehab. Because I had no place to go. And it'll give me a place to shack up for a while. And so, for the grace of God, I did end up back in rehab. For whatever reason, it doesn't matter. And in there, I had a psychic change. And something came to me. And I understand that today to be my higher power. That said, Jamie, if you don't do this now, you're either going to die or it's over for you. Because me, the real me, really cares about my life. Like, I care about what happens to me. I want to be successful. I want to be loving. I want to be a loving partner. I want to give. I want to have a career, on and on. But I can't do those things when I drink and use. I want to be honest about who I am. I want to live an open life. I want to be able, you know, I want to make efforts to be able to be out and open and hold hands with my girlfriend in public, regardless of the fear, and on and on, you know, like I want to be able to do those things that I can't when I'm drinking and using. And so I had that psychic change, and with that, I just went running. I decided I'm going to go to sober living. This is my experience. It was suggested to me before. I'm going to go to sober living. I am going to stay there for a year. I'm going to go somewhere and be told to go to meetings and get my paper signed. Because I knew that my mind would trick me. Like, I always admire people who are able to just go to meetings. That's not my experience. I'm like, I know that I need to be on lockdown. I need to be taught how to take a bath again. I need to be taught how to make my bed. You know, tell you, you know, open the door for you, say thank you, say please, you know, be nice to you, have relationships with other women, you know, and be told to go to meetings. Because I would have talked myself out of it. The ism would have crept in. So I did that. And I did that for about a year, and I got a year of sobriety. And I ended up getting my own place, and I continued to work the program. And the reason I'm sober today is because I got a sponsor and I started working the steps. And I'll never forget another psychic change I had. One of the first things my sponsor told me, she said, Jamie, I was panicking about bills and this and all these exterior things in my life. She said, Jamie, just work the steps and everything else will fall into place. And I was probably complaining about girls or, you know, whatever. Because I was always crying about a girl. Because I, you know, a girl's going to fix me. That was nothing. Girl's going to fix me. I'm going to get sober and I need to get in a relationship. I was complaining about that. And she's like, Jamie, just work the steps and everything's going to fall in place. And I went running with that. I worked steps 1, 2, and 3 and realized that I am powerless over alcohol. My life becomes unmanageable. I didn't understand what this whole, I didn't have a problem with God, but I didn't understand what this whole restoration of sanity and it's being God's will. I didn't understand what that meant, but what I decided to do is to make the decision, as it says in step 3, to move forward. I made the decision to let God be in charge. Not knowing what that meant, I just decided to do it. And I did my 4th and 5th step. And I was really glad to do my 4th and 5th step because I got to talk about myself. And, you know, that's changed a little bit today. I get a little bit tired of talking about myself. That's a gift, actually. And, excuse me. And I did 6 and 7. I didn't know what those meant. I just know I was supposed to go lay down in my bed for an hour and read that small bit of 7. And those are 2 steps that actually grow, given, like, I've come to value more over time. It's like, that's the part where I realized that I've seen all of these things that I've done wrong in my 4th and 5th. Here's the part where I've got to start doing the opposite. And that's just a, like, ongoing, lifelong thing. And I accept that. Can't get it all done in one day. And And I accept that. And I love 6 and 7 for that, because I accept every day that there's an opportunity for me to grow. As long as I show up. As long as I do the steps. As long as I work with my sponsor and I work with other women. 8 and 9 do not do an amends without being with your sponsor first. That's what 8's for. When I first got sober, I wanted to apologize to the world, because my motives were to let you know how good I'm doing. Okay? And some, thank God we do that with a sponsor, because some of the amends that I thought I needed to make the most were not. My ex-girlfriend of 3 years, I wanted to go running at her door and say, I'm sorry. I would not make that amends for 3 years. This is a different girl, by the way. And, excuse me. And, and I got the gift of making amends with her too. And it went fine. So in the 10, 11, and 12, that's my daily reprieve. Look what I've done wrong. Look what I've done right. Pray and meditate and pass this message on. I am really grateful to be here. I love young people of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is where I really feel like I've just obtained my most spiritually high state of being that I could ever imagine. Young people in Alcoholics Anonymous has showed me fun in sobriety. It's a gift, really. I have a wonderful life today. I have a beautiful girlfriend. She's sitting right there. I'm happy. You know, like, I make efforts to... I realized the other day, after many, many years of struggle, is all that I have to do as a partner is to be kind. And it took me so long to get that. Because, you know, me, I have all these fears, right, of being abandoned, of not being loved, not getting what I want. And I had another psychic change the other day. All that I have to do is be kind and loving. And that's what matters. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I get those gifts. And that goes for anybody. It goes for friendships, whatever. All I have to do is be kind to you and give back to you. And thank you so much for asking me to speak, opening over. And
thank you, Jamie. That was awesome. And our third panelist will be Zach A. from Casa Grande.
I'm Zach, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Zach! We love you, Zach! Lots and lots and lots!
And say that's the first time I've actually had that done to me, and it's a lot more exciting than a gay and lesbian meeting. Just saying. First off, yes, I am an alcoholic, and yes, I am gay. Big shock. I actually want to thank the committee for asking me to speak up here, because I don't get a lot of chances to speak, and I actually haven't spoke and shared my story in about 4 years. So this is actually a huge honor for me. But I am not originally from Arizona. I'm originally from San Francisco. I was born and raised in a Jehovah's Witness family. So being gay didn't go over very well. let's just start right there. My first taste of alcohol was when I was teething. I'm from an Italian family, so that's how you get the kid to not cry when they're teething. I started drinking when I was about 4 years old. I was drinking alcoholically by the time I was 7 and 8 years old. I was taking straight shots by the time I was 8 years old, and I loved it. I loved the taste. I loved the feeling. I loved what it did. And it went on from there. It got to the point to where I was drinking every single day. I was pouring alcohol in water bottles and hiding it in my room so that I could drink later on when my parents didn't know. I was asking my mom, hey, can I set up the drinks for tonight? You know, my parents are not alcoholics. They drink occasionally. They have a drink before bed every so often. But, you know, when I was there, it was like, hey, I want to set up some drinks. My mom's like, all right. I'm like, can I pour? She goes, all right. So she'd go in there and watch me pour the alcohol. Well, when she left, I would switch my drink with my father's drink because his was stronger. and I'm doing this at 8 years old. You know, so obviously my alcoholism just kept progressing from a very, very young age. And being raised in the religion, I was always told gay is the worst possible thing you can ever choose to be. And that's how it was put to me. And when I finally, in middle school, I started, you know, all my life I've always realized, I was like, I always had some attraction to females, obviously. Watching TV, somebody driving by in a car, you know, anything like that. Middle school is pretty much when I started to figure out, something's not quite right. So obviously I kicked up the drinking a little bit more, because if I'm drunk, I don't think about it till the next day. And when I got to high school, I knew something was different. I didn't know being gay was an option. Because I was told it wasn't. And that's what I believed. I got to meet quite a few gay and lesbian people in high school. I was by no means the good kid. I was one of the ones who walked out the door in black corduroys, t-shirts, you know, stuff like that. And as soon as I got to work, to school, I was complete black, Doc Martens, goth makeup, and running around going crazy. And as soon as I walked off the campus again, I was back to being normal looking, according to my family, and going back home. That was pretty much my life. My father owned his own business, so I worked a lot after school too. But I met a lot of gay and lesbian people in high school, obviously, and started to realize, you know what? This might be okay. I kind of like this. This is definitely more my style. But how do I hide this? Because obviously I can't say anything. So, a lot of alcohol, a lot of double lives, stuff like that is how I hid my whole entire lifestyle for my entire life, basically. I pretty much kept up with that, just leading that double life, and I got to be 16 or so, got my own job, kind of started sneaking seeing people at work so that my parents wouldn't know. So I had got a girlfriend and was taking alcohol to work with me and doing all kinds of double life stuff when my parents found out. And I got confronted and said, "We hear you might have gay tendencies." I went, "What? What are those? I don't have those. I don't know what you're talking about. Can you leave so I can drink?" You know, and that was pretty much my life. My life was just hiding what I was doing and drinking so I could hide what I was doing. You know, that was my whole entire life growing up. And doing everything I could to make my parents happy. Even though I was failing classes due to learning disabilities, which made it even worse because my parents didn't understand that. So they just came down harder on me, so I drank more. And that's all it was, is just hiding every aspect of my life. You know? Like I said, things just kept progressing. My parents found out I had gay tendencies. Or those people, as my mother likes to say. But you know, yeah. So of course, obviously, I hid everything. I denied everything. And started figuring out, well, if they know this, they've got to be able to read my mind, or they're watching me or something. So I got to be more careful. Then I found out that my father actually was having me followed. So I reverted back to being as good as I possibly could. And my drinking kicked up to a very, very high level. I got pulled out of high school because my parents thought that being around people in a public school is why I had tendencies, quote unquote, for those listening. But I got pulled out and I got put into a private home studies correspondence course where my parents' friends could watch me, who were also in the same religion. And it got even worse because I only went to school 3 times a week. So 9 a.m. in the morning, when my parents were leaving for work, I was passed out drunk already. And that's pretty much how my life went on. Quite a few suicide attempts later, I'm still there. My parents are finding out that it's not going away. I get kicked out, which is honestly one of the best things that could have happened to me. Because I got to realize that, you know, I am okay. I'm not going to live my life for someone else. I need to live it to the best of my ability. And at that time, I wouldn't say it was the best of my ability, but it was an ability of some sort. But, you know, I got my own place. I got to do whatever I want. Obviously, alcohol, drugs had already entered the picture, too. So I was pretty much trash 24/7, and I'm 17. You know, things progressively get worse, and I go through quite a few ups and downs and stuff, and I had separated myself from my family for quite some time, and eventually got to the point to where I could somewhat be civil with them. They didn't push the religion on me, and I didn't say anything about being gay to them. And it was pretty much a business relationship, and that was it. But as time went on, I just separated myself as much as I possibly could. Eventually, I met some people at another job that I'd worked that were in AA. And I got to have a glimpse into this program. And I wasn't exactly going to meetings for the right reason. Let's just say she was cute at the time. So I was going to meetings and then going out after and getting drunk just because, I don't know. It worked for me at the time, I guess. Well, eventually everybody that I was hanging out with that time all relapsed together. We all went off using for quite some time. And I don't know what happened to all of them, but I know that I hit my bottom. My sister is actually one of the ones that helped me hit that bottom. She pretty much just said, "Are you done?" And I broke down and said, yeah. I checked into an outpatient rehab at the time. And at that time, my mother had a very bad outlook on the program of AA because of other viewpoints. She had no clue about the program and didn't really know much about it, but she had her very strong opinion. So I hid the fact that I was in AA. And I got put into outpatient, and I was getting ready one day to go to a meeting with some of the girls from the program. I went to an all-women's rehab, by the way. And I didn't do anything, okay? I didn't. I was in counseling all the time, but I didn't do anything. It was good. But, you know, I was getting ready to go to a meeting, and my mom goes, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to Redwood City." She goes, "I didn't ask what city you're going to." I said, "Where you're going? Where are you going?" My friends called me, said they're outside. I said, "I'm in AA, I'm going to a meeting, bye." And I ran out the door. I left my mom standing there like, "Huh? What just happened?" I stayed out until about midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, so that she'd be asleep by the time I got back, and went to work the next morning. But my mom finally sat me down a couple days later and said, "You know, I'm proud of you. I'm glad you're getting your life together." And she's like, you know what my opinions are, but, you know, I'm willing to give it another try and let's see what happens. I said, okay, cool. So I pretty much kept a very busy schedule of meetings, work, friends, and outpatient. And some days when I came home from rehab, my mom would be sitting on the couch with a picture of margaritas drinking. I'd come in, say hi, go to the kitchen, eat, go downstairs and go to sleep. I'd lost my house beforehand, obviously, and my parents let me sleep in the garage in a sleeping bag on a cement floor with no AC and no heater in the middle of San Francisco winter. So that shows you a little bit of how bad I wanted this program and how bad I wanted a better life. But, you know, as it progressed, I got out of rehab and decided, you know, I need a new start. I had one friend living in Casa Grande, Arizona, so I packed up and moved. And I can honestly say it's the best decision that I never made. And why I say I never made it is because I flipped a coin after I prayed. And three times it landed on Arizona. So I moved to Arizona. and I've gotten a very tight network of people in Casa Grande that are always by my side. My sponsor has as many years sober as I am alive. Her sobriety date is exactly 1 year before my birthday, or 1 week before my birthday. So it's a really cool thing to be able to see that. We have a very close-knit group of sober sisters. We've gotten to do our step work together. All of us have heard each other's fifth steps, which is an amazing thing. We all got to sit down and do our fourth and fifth together. I work with other people. I go into hospitals and institutions and get to bring meetings into people there. And it is an amazing thing for me to be able to come from not knowing anything about life being sober to being able to work with somebody else right now. For me, that's where I get my strength. I can sit here and tell you all the work that I've had to do to get to this point, but you know, that's in the steps. The first thing I did when I got in the program is get a sponsor. Work the steps. For me, it took a little bit longer than just working them straight through. I'm stubborn. I like to sit on my ass sometimes. So for the first few years, it was a little rough, and I'm sure my sponsors hated me at that time. But you know, once I started working the steps is when my life got immensely better. I got happier. I'm not going to say that life in sobriety has been easy. I've still dealt with, you know, life on life's terms, things happening. Still deal with the public and being gay. And living in a small town, surprisingly, it's not as bad as you'd think. I don't know why we have a lot of gays out there. They're like hiding in the country or something, I don't know. Surprisingly, I actually get more looks in Phoenix than I do in Casa Grande. But I'm okay with that today because I'm okay with me. And how I got to be okay with me is going through those steps with another person. And I'm glad to be able to say that I can stand up and say, yes, I am an alcoholic, and yes, I am gay. You know, it doesn't mean my struggles are over. I'm dealing with a few other issues that my sponsor and I will be working on probably pretty soon after this convention. But I can face that stuff today. You know, I don't have to hide from it. I don't have to hide behind a bottle. I can go tell somebody else and know that it's going to stay with them. And that's an amazing thing because I never had that before in my life. I never had people who understood me or people who cared about me. And I know everybody in this room does. You know, and for me that was a lifesaver. It's having somebody actually care. You know, I can say today that I love my life. I love living it. I love every aspect of it. And it's because of this program. You know, I get to share my life with an amazing partner, sitting right here, by the way. you know, I get to do that. Before, I tried to force myself to, and it didn't work out. But today I get to do those things because of this program and because of working those steps and working with other people. And it's an amazing thing for me. This is actually one of my first conferences in, I think, pretty much ever. So it's really awesome to be here. I've been to a couple, like, here and there little things, catch a meeting or two, but this is the first time we've actually gotten to spend a couple days. And I'm very grateful for that, very grateful to be able to be here with all of you and see the young peoples and see how it works and how active everyone is in this program. And it makes me happy that no matter what I'm going through, there's always somebody there who understands. And with that, I will stop.
Thank you, Jack. I would like to thank the panel members, Megan from Tucson, Jamie from Phoenix, and Zach from Pasadena. And it says give the panel members their gift for sharing. Please help me close with the... I don't think I was supposed to read that. My bad. Please help me close with the responsibility pledge.
I was like, oh, wait.